Yo guys, welcome to The Last Lap. Don't forget to drop a lovely juicy 5-star rating if you're watching on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Hope you enjoy and let's get into it. Good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Last Lap podcast. How are we all doing on this fine day? We're firmly into 2023 season now. Well, not 2023 season, 2023 year. We've got some off-season chat to talk about. How are you enjoying 2023, mate?
It's been quite cold.
I hear that.
It's been a bit too cold for me, mate.
Bit rainy.
I feel like maybe next year during this period, we should take this like to, you know, Bahamas or Mauritius or like somewhere nice. Take the set, you know.
Let's just go to the Caribbean.
Yeah,
and
man.
Just plug it in.
It's too cold here, bruv.
Yeah, but, I hear that. So obviously, if anyone wants to make that happen,
Emirates or Qatar Airlines or Singapore Airlines,
anyone wants to sponsor the podcast, we've got room for that.
Yeah, we do,
ladies and gentlemen.
We've got perfect space right down there.
We do. Right,
you put your logo down there. Perfect.
Down here on the table, and we've got a very special guest on the show as well today. Who I'm sure would love to go to the Bahamas with us for the season.
Yeah,
Hayden Gullis and or Goulash. How are you doing today, mate?
I'm doing good. I've come out of hibernation. Obviously, it's winter season. F1 off season, so the cobwebs have been dusted off, been taken out of the cupboard, and for an hour on here, and then I'll be put back later.
He's touched some grass.
And last time you were on, you were me.
I was you.
You were me for the day.
So
how this is very feel? Weird, actually, having you on either.
It was
side.
Fun. Yeah. Clearly, I didn't do a good enough job because it took a while to come back. So you're back here.
Fair enough. No, but how you doing, man? How's your off season been? How's your F1 esports was keeping you busy as well?
F1 esports was keeping me busy. A great season to be a part of. I think there was like 4 or 5 drivers going in for the championship into the final event. And Lucas Blakely, a great story for him to come out and finally win the championship after years of trying to get into F1 esports and then, you know, working his way through the ranks and now being champion. So it was a great season to be a part of. But apart from that, it's just been good just to relax, you know, sort of forget a little bit about Formula One, take a little break and now get back into it for 2023.
Well, because I wanted to ask you, actually, you've worked in the kind of esports and with F1 esports now for a little bit, and it's like, where do you see the space going? Because obviously with lockdown, a lot of people jumped into sim racing, not just F1.
A lot more eyeballs on it.
Yeah, iRacing, Twitch Quartet and all that. Like, are you seeing the space grow? Do you think it's going in a positive direction?
Yeah, I think the next step for it is to go back to a LAN event. We had that before lockdown, and then it went back to everyone from their homes. Yeah. There's a bit of talk between the teams because a few teams don't like that idea because they have these amazing spaces at their at their bases. So there's a bit of talk of that, whether it's going to go LAN. But there is promising that it is looking like it's going to go that way for next year. And then it's just building upon that to see, you know, sell tickets, get people involved, like we see with other esports of Call of Duty and these other games, which are just massive and on a huge scale. F1 esports is nowhere near that level yet because we're stuck in a studio where there's no audience and all the drivers are from their bedrooms or from these great spaces. So that's where it can go. For me personally, I'd love it to go onto the Formula One calendar, follow the grid around, and you could replace something like the Porsche Super Cup, which, you know, if you do enjoy that, sorry, but no one really cares about it.
You hold one of the Porsche Super Cup.
One of three people.
Individuals.
Yeah. But like, it could replace that and be a bit of a sports series, and there'd be more eyes on it. Not everybody has to, you know, sit down and watch it on a screen at the circuit, but if you were interested and you do want to watch it or you want to go to the space where it is held, then you can do that. I think personally that would be cool and it would be amazing for the drivers involved as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know with, is it one of the GT championships, they actually integrate the esports into the actual championship, which is kind of pretty interesting. But I mean, the viewership that F1 esports is getting, do you think, I know you're not, it's not filling state, it's not League of Legends, but do you think there is the potential to get to a stage where you could fill like a, you know, 1,000, 2,000 maybe seat stadium based off the viewership you're getting? Or do you think it's still, that's still maybe 5-10 years down the line?
I think it needs to be trialed, and I think it needs to be marketed the right way and bring the right people along. Like, you have the drivers who, like people like Jana Watmir, has a huge following, and people go and follow and go there to watch him. I think
the chat's just full of Jana stands.
You've got actual like personalities now. Not as in, not in the sense that there weren't personalities before, but they've become celebrities that become sort of content creators within that space, which I think is really helpful. Like Jarno Otmir himself could just sell bear tickets realistically for an event like that because he's got like a sick following on YouTube and Twitch.
And it's because of that. So there is a problem that a lot of these drivers just sort of stay in their own lane. They just do the racing. They're just there to do the best job when the event starts, but that's it. Whereas you've got people like Jarno, you've got people like Lucas Blakely, Marcel Kiefer, who are doing a lot of content on the other side of it. And then that's bringing people in. So that's why it'd be such a great thing to go to a LAN event where, you know, we can just go up to somebody who's a little bit further down the grid or somebody who's a bit of an unknown character, shove a microphone in their face and then just see this character come out of them and everyone be like, oh no, do you know what? I actually kind of like that guy. I'm going to start supporting him as well. Yeah. And I think, yeah, going to that LAN aspect, but because it's still from, you know, a home basis, it would be a bit of a risk to go into that environment. And that's why I say you've got to bring the right people along. So if maybe an F1 driver can, because they used to do that in the past. I mean, we went to events before and Lando Norris rocked up and we had like Gasly rocking up as well to these events. So it would draw people to come in and then also watch a great spectacle of F1 esports.
Because I still think we're in the foundational period. Because like you said, like Mercedes got an amazing facility. You know, I've been to we've been to McLaren's one. Like it's great. But then you've got like Thomas Ronner, who was fighting at the front for Haas, and he's in his bedroom.
Yeah, you can see his folded clothes in the background.
Yeah,
his mum's just coming halfway through. I bet you're watching here, darling.
Which is kind of like
dirty socks. Take them out.
There's something nice about that. There's something like real about that. Yeah. I think it shows how accessible it is.
Yeah, true. It does actually.
Because these rigs, like, yeah, they're not cheap by any means, but compared to top tier karting, if you want to go top tier esports, you know, over time you can assemble a rig and, you know, practice. Everyone can put time in. And because also as well, like, I think in a lot of the grid now, and we're seeing with Le Mans, what is it, Le Mans 24 Virtual is this weekend, isn't it?
Yes.
And there's a lot of real racing drivers. Like every team's got two pro drivers.
Yeah.
So Max is driving in it for Redline. You've got like Danny Giancadella, you've got, you know, Jimmy's in it. Obviously, he's a huge name in the space as well from that side. But like, I think as more of the, this is what I say, like in 10 years, all the F1 drivers will also be sim racers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I play a lot with Zhou Guanyu, like just playing F1. Yeah.
He loves it.
He will message me to play. Like when we spoke to him, actually, you weren't there because you missed out.
I wasn't.
To Bahrain. We spoke to him and I just dropped him a message just like, because I was wanting to work with the Alfa Romeo team at that time. And I was just like, look, if you want to jump on, do some open lobbies, I'll get the esports drivers involved. We'll do something like that and maybe sort it through them. And I just expected it to come from the Alfa Romeo esports team to sort that. And he just drops me a message on Instagram, just be like, you want to play F1 tonight? And I was like, okay, yeah. Sure. And then it's just from there, like he'll message me and he is game for it. And it's not just someone like Lando, because it's not the same thing driving a real F1 car and playing the game. Like you do have to put in some effort and time to get good. And Lando did get good over the lockdown period. So did Charles, so did George, all that lot. Mm. But Joe like will just jump on and just be quick. Like he is fast. Like, I don't think he's obviously esports level, but he could definitely have a race with a few of those guys and just, you know, be in the mix for a while, I think, for sure.
That's so jokes to say, by the way, that like F1 driver Zhou Guanyu is not quite esports level.
Yeah, but it's the same the other way around.
I get you.
Would be fast in a real life car, don't get me wrong. But he's not going to be beating an F1 driver jumping in.
It's like when you look at like a set of course that are factor iRacing, from my understanding of drivers that I've spoken to, it's like the talent, the real life talent passes easier to that with the F1 game, because it's not because it's an accessible game. It's not like a true kind of hardcore simulator. It's about not just being a quick real racing driver and having it pass over, but understanding the nuances of that game, I suppose. Like what do you think with F1, you know, as a franchise, do you think it will move more towards like do you see a day where, I don't know, there's like two engines in the game? There's like a casual engine and then there is that more hardcore engine, because F1 are putting their money and like they're putting F1 esports like on the main F1 YouTube channel, like they're putting it in front of everyone. They clearly want to promote it. Do you think that product will change over time, or do you think that game will stay casual?
I mean, I can't say too much, but I believe that, yes, it is going to have two different engines, maybe two different games in the future, one for the more casual, because it is a franchise at the end of the day. It's got to be able to be like open doors for people. It's got to allow people to just pick up the game and play, because they might just look at that on the shelf and go, oh, you know what, I watched Drive to Survive, for example. Let's see what playing an F1 game
Everyone
is like.
Everyone starts somewhere.
They can't then jump in and it's like the craziest simulator.
If you jump into something like that on iRacing with a controller, it's going to be the worst experience of your life. Just put it on the side or go refund it because you just didn't enjoy it. But it's got to have an aspect of just jump in, play, and all these different gimmicks of like the sort of... Journey Star, I can't remember what they called it. Breaking Point, I think it was. Yeah, they had the story mode in there.
The one where you decide how your living room looks.
And all of that stuff. Basically integrate The Sims into it. but that stuff is obviously for a newer player to jump in. But then there's that aspect of other racing games, like you say, the iRacing, the Assetto Corsas, that are more realistic, where the real-life drivers will jump on those, and they're more inclined, because Max Verstappen, for example, does not like the F1 game because it is that sort of simcade. Mm. Because basically the way it's set up is the guy who does the handling will make a handling system that is pretty much similar to real-life cars. It will come back, and then they'll go to him, right, you need to dumb it down a little bit and make it more arcadey, do it again, and then do it again until they get something that's kind of in the middle, it doesn't suit. So therefore, an F1 driver jumping into that, it will be like driving a new car because the handling is so different and the way that the car moves and stuff like that. So
I just feel like it makes so much sense for the F1 game because of where, you know, in motorsport, motorsport's got such a unique connection, real life to virtual. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're good at FIFA, there's no correlation to being good at football in real life.
No one likes to think so, but...
Without the knee injury.
Of course, It's always a knee. It's always a knee injury.
It's always a knee. It's never like, oh, my groin went like one time. Like, it's my knee.
Always your knee. But that's the thing, like, you can, like you say, you can convert someone, like, get him in as a casual, and you can build up. And I feel like it makes sense for the game if Codemasters, you watch him. Hear me out, right? Just please sponsor. It just makes sense to me.
Well, all I'll say is watch this space.
Watch
this space. Because what you're talking about could be in the works.
And it's all because I said it.
And it's all because you said it. But it is true that you can take those, because we're examples of that. Like, before we had no racing experience, and then we jump into that F1 car around Buckmore Park that we did.
Yep.
And I was 10 seconds quicker than you, mainly because...
Wow.
I think it was actually more than that, because I was actually 10 seconds quicker than Aldas.
I have more to lose, Hayden. I have a dog. I'm married.
Yeah.
I own a house.
You weren't married then.
No, I weren't, to be fair.
The reason that I was able to go into that and just push from the off and feel comfortable was because I've done all this sim racing. Because I've sat in a rig with a wheel, and I know straight away, I was just like, took a couple of corners, and I thought, okay, this is going to feel awful. And I was like, hang on a minute. This is actually easy.
So much quicker that's the thing. The speed you're able, because of that sim racing experience you've got, it's like, whereas I was just like, this car's worth so much money. If I put it into a wall, I'm terrified. So I was just creeping around
Did either of you watch that show back in the day called GT Academy?
Yes.
And it got like gamers in, and basically like if they won a competition, they'd go and race at 24
Well, they're doing
hours.
A film on that, isn't it?
They're doing a film on that. They are. Yeah, the film coming out this summer. Bring that back, ladies and
gentlemen. I forgot about that.
Get Hayden on it.
Yes. Oh. I want to drive an F1 car. Like a modern HG F1 Academy. Car.
See, that's the thing, right? Because I don't have that confidence. If you had to give me the choice between driving like a GT, like a GT3, GT4, and an F1 car, I'd pick the GT3, GT4.
See, I'd pick the F1 car mainly because I feel like I have more knowledge of that. Like when I jump into iRacing or stuff like that, doing GTs, I'm not necessarily much of a fan because it does feel different, all of it. And I'm not saying that driving F1 game feels like driving an F1 car in real life. Mm. No, I would still have to build up. I won't be able to jump an F1 car.
Of course.
Like, oh, this is easy.
It's a lot better than nothing.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, because I'm more comfortable in that scenario, I'd love to just jump into a Formula One car. And because we've done things before, but we've never got out of first gear. That's been the worst thing of all the stuff that we've done, is because we've done it around such short circuits. By the time you get to max revs of first gear, about to change second, I've got to brake and go into a corner.
But this is what's amazing. Like, we're talking about essentially the video game version of real life being an actual training aid and actually getting you a head start. You look at what Jimmy's doing in Praga, like he's competitive.
Yeah.
And he's not got a career in karting when he was a kid or any of that growing
up. Like, just off sim racing experience, basically.
And
that, just by the way as well, if the authorities are watching, if you give me the choice of a GT car and F1 car, I would choose neither because I can't drive.
I mean, you don't need a real life driving license to go and drive one of those. So
You just need a racing license.
Max Verstappen didn't have a real driving license when he first stepped in a Toro Rosso.
Yeah, crazy. Absolutely.
But, yeah, there was kind of like the Sidemen charity match of football. Mm. There was like a charity race. I think some French YouTubers or streamers set it up and they did a drive in some, I think it was some F4s at the Paul Ricard circuit, I believe. And it was just like a charity event where they're all influencers just taking part in this race in F4 cars.
Jokes.
Which I'm like, hello? Why don't we do this in the UK? Yeah,
and also, Paul Ricard, like no rules racing, is like runoffs for days. You can take about 16 different...
I was going to say, they were all doing different versions of the track. Every single one of them took a different chicane. 1,000%.
That would be chaos. But, Hayden, I'm excited for where the esports space goes. And
Same.
1,000.
Bits, mate. But
excited for next season as well.
Yeah, exactly. No, very excited. But let's get back to actual F1. The real stuff.
Sorry, you saying that esports is not
fake?
I knew that was going to happen.
How dare you? You're like every comment on the F1 Twitter channel.
Get a new account.
Launch season's coming.
It is indeed.
It's soon. We've just had Mercedes announce the W14 launch, which is going to be on
the 14th. Though, why would it be on the 15th when it's the W14?
That is annoying.
That annoys
isn't it?
Me.
That's a good point. I didn't clock that actually. Now,
grow up, Mercedes.
Because Toto has to be. With Susie Wolf.
He's got things to do on Valentine's Day. He's a romantic. Yeah. I like that. Whereas we've got Ferrari on Valentine's Day. Ironically, they're going to break all our hearts this year.
Bless them. Do we think that Mercedes... What are your expectations this year? Because obviously, started the year poorly. It was quite clear about like early that they weren't going to be in a fight for a title. Kind of came good towards the end of the year. Is it a... How pivotal is this season for Mercedes? Do they need, like, can they afford another, we're catching up season? Or do they need to be, because obviously Lewis, we don't know how much longer he's going to stay in the sport. Obviously, George is also not going to be, you can't expect George to be too patient for too long. Like, he wants to assert himself in that team long term as well.
Yeah. In terms of can they get away with it? In terms of George, I think, yeah. Like for me, I think with George, because he's young and the fact that he spent a lot of time in a Williams, I think he'll be okay with where he is right now just for like one more season. Then after that, he'd probably ask questions.
Yeah.
I would like to imagine that Mercedes will actually have more pace anyway and will actually, based off the end of last season, they looked a lot more competitive and obviously the more aero time they're going to have. I would like to imagine they're gonna find that pace. Lewis, I'm not sure though.
I think the key point you said there is the aero time and also the development of the car. I think Mercedes are one of the teams that are very strong at developing a car for the season. We saw it last year. We've seen it in previous seasons when they had fights with Ferrari, that they had the better development by the end of the season and their car was quicker and they disappear. So, yeah, if they have a weaker start, obviously they can't be back in the midfield. I think if they're in a sort of 1.5 again instead of Formula 2, they're in Formula 1.5, then they'll be able to catch up because obviously Red Bull are going to be pulled back a lot by the penalties that they received due to the cost cap. I don't know whether that... I think that comes into effect more, I'd say, towards the end of this season.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Sort of when that's going to start to affect them. Because they obviously have that basis. They can build that car from last season.
Yeah.
I think they're still going to come out quite strong. But they have to kind of be a little bit cautious over the rest of the season with where they delegate their time. And I think it could hurt them. Ferrari, obviously, are an unknown. We know they can make a really strong car. They did at the start of last season. But is Fred Vasseur going to come in and change that and make them stronger? Who knows? If he can, then Ferrari look like the team that potentially could go on to go and be champions if Red Bull do struggle with this capping that they have.
Because I just think like going into the first race, when we go to Bahrain, it's like, I think Mercedes need to be within like a half a second in qualifying, both cars.
Yeah.
Like, because they need to be starting. Yes, the Red Bull have a, but they've got the... They've clearly got the best kind of foundation there. I feel like we're going to see, like, once all these cars do start to get launched, they're going to be like 10 Red Bull clones.
Yeah.
Let's be like, surely.
Yeah.
Surely that's the direction now that you have to kind of settle on. Yeah. Maybe the Ferrari, you know, curved side pod call maybe has to stick with that because they've got the close relationship.
Will Mercedes bring side pods back? That's the question.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Because I know it's like there's more to it than just what they look like on the outside. Yeah, I don't know, because it sounds like what Mercedes was saying, that they were open to keeping it, and there's been rumours that they've kept with it. I don't know, it's a risk, isn't it?
I think their problem was mainly like the porpoising. That was the huge struggle. Yeah. So it's fixing that properly.
Yeah.
So they get to a Red Bull standard where there is none at all. Mm. If also, they can get to that, then they can start to push a lot faster. But yeah, I mean, it could just go.
This thing, because
visibly straight line speed as well was just like such a massive problem for them. I always talk about it, but when George was trying to overtake Max at Brazil, I think during the sprint, even with DRS and crazy slipstream down that main straight, just couldn't actually get an overtake done. Whereas if it was the other way around, like Red Bull's a bullet in a straight line.
Yeah.
And that's what the reduced side pods was supposed to do, wasn't it? Yeah. Less drag, faster in a straight line. But I think then because there was less drag, faster in a straight line, the porpoising was a lot harsher. So as you're bouncing, you're going to be slowing down the car. So it just didn't help them. But yeah, this is the year to change your philosophy, because you can't do it later down the road. If you're going to change stuff now and go and copy, and that's what we're going to see. By the end of these regulations, at the start of them, it's 10 different people writing on a blank sheet of paper, and we'll come up with 10 different concepts. And then by the end of the regulation, as we've seen with all the regulations in the past, everyone kind of comes to something that is quite similar. You'll see different, maybe two different philosophies, like I can probably...
Or higher low rake.
Or the thumb noses that we had from previous years. So obviously Ferrari stuck with the thumb nose, whereas Mercedes kind of had a bit more of the pinned one. Mm-hmm. So that's the two different philosophies that we're talking about here. But a lot of people are going to be looking at Red Bull, jotting things down, going, okay, we can do that. Like Aston Martin, in all fairness, whether they did copy them or didn't, it's nothing new.
They all teams do it.
Exactly. As soon as that car's out, you can see what they're doing and you can be like, oh, that looks good. Obviously, if it's... looks perfect on the inside as well, that's where it's like, oh, that's a bit fishy, because how did you see that? But if you try and copy and sculpt it from the outside.
Yeah, because I mean, my understanding is that Aston actually had that design in the work for months and they proved it. But obviously, because they've got a lot of new staff from both Red Bull and Mercedes, obviously you can't, you can't expect people to not, oh, it looked a bit like this.
They
can't bring technical drawings over, but they can still kind of, be influenced. Yeah. But I don't know, I just think with Mercedes, it's like, there is going to be this pressure to adhere to what works for Red Bull, right? But also it's like, maybe there is potential in this philosophy for Mercedes. It's just, does it take another season? And then once they get to that potential, it's actually quicker.
Yeah.
Like I guess that's the challenge they've got in their minds, right? Do we, it's safer to just adhere to the convention.
Yeah.
But also, actually, if you really think, like this, we just need to, and then we'll even be quicker.
High risk, high reward.
Yeah, it's like that with anything. I could copy your content, right? I could do exactly the same thing as you, but I won't get the same amount of views as you because you're already doing that, and I will never surpass you. But if I go and do something different, there is that chance that it's going to fail, but there's that chance that it could be better, with a different audience.
It's true.
That I do surpass you, sort of thing. So that's the way to sort of look at that.
Never.
But
sensing.
So that's the choice for Mercedes. Do we play the safe option? Copy Red Bull, but might not be quicker than them because we're always one step behind.
Mm. Mm. And also, back to the car launches anyway. We've got, Feb 6th, Williams, 11th, AlphaTauri, 13th, Aston and McLaren, 14th, Ferrari, 15th, Mercedes, 16th, Alpine. What I want to ask you, Feb 6th, Williams, what's going to get announced first? Livery or team principal? Because we still don't know.
Yeah, true. True.
For the same time. Very early for them, but I think they've been doing that for the last few seasons.
I feel like they have been the first.
Yeah,
they
like to say that they're, we might be last in the standings, but we want to be first of the car launches.
But we got there. Yeah. We made the
we
car.
We were the first ones. Don't worry about the stand. Don't look at those, okay?
And like to be ready for testing, which has happened before.
We made our below average car before anybody else.
But for real though, what's Jost and FX have gone.
Mm.
There's been no kind of words. Obviously, this isn't ideal. You've got Logan coming in as a rookie. Sure, you've got a good stable driver in Alex, but it's like, I don't know, man. It's hard to predict Williams being anything other than stone dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Everyone's rocked up at the factory after winter. Be like, so what are we doing? We've got no boss, I don't know.
I don't know. Holiday? In a bit.
They're all just playing ping pong right now.
I think Alex is player manager.
Player manager.
Honestly, like, what's coming first? And like, there's not even been any. This is what I mean. It's not even been any rumours like linking anyone to this Williams.
Yeah, so keep on leadership. Asking, no, I'm good. Thanks. See you later.
They can't get anyone.
He's just not picking up calls. But
the main rumours that I heard were that Susie Wolf was going to come in and do the team principal role, but she currently works in Formula E as a team principal there. So whether she wants to leave that, go to Formula One in what is going to be a very difficult job. Like, taking the Williams job is not an easy...
Was she there when Toto was at Williams?
As a driver...
Yeah, because I know
she was a test driver up to 2014, 2015, because she did the on-track test.
So she's got experience with that team. There's a relationship there to a degree.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And you know, there's the relationship with the... There's a sort of relationship with the Mercedes team, isn't there, to engine suppliers. Mm-hmm. And then, as they've had in the past, like drivers drive for them. There's a talk of Kimi Antonelli, maybe, when he comes through to get that Williams seat as a sort of what George Russell did. So there could be a kind of partnership through in there, because Williams, you know, they got bought out. They stuck with the Williams name, which is great. It's what we love to see. But it's nothing still has really changed for them. They did a lot better this season, but they're still, you know, down at the bottom. And I'll be honest,
I feel like it's actually worse. I feel like 2022 was a step backwards from 2021. Because in 2021, you saw George, like, I suppose you did see Albon in the midfield as well last season, every now and again. But it felt underwhelming. It felt like there was momentum there. From 2020 to 2021.
Yeah. Yeah. Williams,
obviously, I know George got that second in Spa in crazy circumstances, but even other than that, like, it seemed like Williams weren't actually off the back in terms of pace, whereas then in 2022, there were times where it was just like everyone else, then Williams.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, because it's like they really struggled. When they got their first point, it was that really risky strategy, staying on the hards for so long and then pitting on the soft on the last lap. Yeah. And the only other tracks that they really scored any points was... when they had the straight line speed and anything else they just struggle with. Obviously, Latifi got some in wet conditions in Japan, but that was like a lot of chaos, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Hitted very early, I think, for intermediates.
You can take that risk when you're at the back.
Exactly, yeah.
That's why Seb could take... Seb spinning in turn one actually like made his race.
You could
argue, because then...
In the back, you make a wild...
Might as well just... Yeah, and then actually it paid off perfect.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for them. So, yeah, I think you're right. 2021 was a stronger season because they felt like a bit more in the fight in the midfield, whereas now I think Albon was very strong. It's hard to tell because you have a big difference between the two teammates. Albon was very strong fighting in the midfield. I think the car at times was capable. I think it's similar around the Aston Martin.
Because I think that's where the
car
should
have
been.
We were always fighting with drivers. Like, it was always Stroll versus Albon. They were always so close together.
That's it. It's true.
But Latifi, unfortunately, was just off of that. So it'd be interesting this season where Logan Sargeant, because you bang the Logan Sargeant drum, thinks he's a very strong driver. So we're going to find out then. How good Alex Albon really is. If he starts to move away from Logan Sargeant this season, then Albon is a really strong driver and Red Bull really did miss out.
Do you think there's a potential shout here because of that kind of stifled momentum and with all the interest of other brands coming in, big manufacturers, Porsche, Williams, for example? Did Derilton look at what's gone on? Look at, you know, they've done a big roll of the dice, you know, Williams family have left, bought Yoscapito and FX in, hasn't worked out. You know, their investment, I still think they could, you know, as F1 as a sport grows, and this is why there's so much, you know, anti-Andretti sentiment seemingly from the teams, because they are like, they want to keep it a closed book because it's so valuable at the moment. Yeah. Drive to Survive is about to come out, which we'll talk about in a bit. But it's like, do you think that selling the team off, I feel like Derilton would probably make money on their investment. And do you think they're like, I think they should be considering it for sure. And I think it's for someone like Porsche to come in, for example, and take over, like, there's not many doors, there's not many opportunities to get in. And I think if you get in now and look at the trajectory of the sport, where it could be in 10 years' time, when, say, we get 12 teams on the grid, there might not be your opportunities to come in, because we don't want 15, 16 teams.
It's not going to happen.
That would be silly.
That's interesting, actually, because I feel like at the moment, this is probably the highest interest there's ever been in terms of just general... not General Motors, general brands getting, like, car brands entering Formula One. I don't think there's ever been a point in F1 history where you've had all of what we have so far, plus Audi, plus Porsche, plus
Hyundai.
Fucking everybody wants to be, but Honda want to get back involved again as well. I think if Williams were thinking of doing that, then I think now is a really good time, especially while there's crazy amounts of interest.
Mm-hmm. I think they will make profits on their investment. When they took over Williams was around 2020. They were really struggling then, and they have got into that midfield fight. Like, they're not miles off. They're not always at the back. They're still in that fight.
It's not like 2019.
It's not like half 2021 or whatever.
Yeah, it's just because the top 10 score points.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, I feel like Albon was finishing around that 11th, that 12th, 13th.
Yeah,
you're so close, but you get nothing. You might as well finish last because you've got no points for it. So I think, someone like Porsche coming in could be good, but obviously fans are not going to like it because I feel like that Williams name will go in that heritage, unfortunately. But maybe it is time to move on and
what,
move
what
away.
What would you rather? That. Porsche take over that team, rebrand it, and it be competitive, or it stay as Williams and stay towards the back?
What a question.
Like I said, maybe it's time to move on and move away from that and be like, look, it's happened. It's a shame for Williams of what they've achieved, but let's remember them for that and not remember them for where they are now. Remember them for when they were champions and all of that stuff.
This is what I mean. It's kind of like, it's like, you know, someone like an old, you know, an old family relative who's clearly like, you know, not quite what they used to be.
About and to it's like, stairs.
You know, when's the...
What's you're saying, when's the right time to kill them off?
I'm not saying...
Where are you taking the story?
I'm just saying, you understand what I'm saying? It's like, they're past their prime, you know, and it's
go
just
into the home.
You know, I'm just saying, right? It's sad seeing such a iconic F1 name be so consistently at the back for since 2017 was okay, and then 18, 19, it's just deadly been. And it's just like if there's not a potential, because it's competition, right? You've not only got to develop your car, but you've got to out-develop everyone else.
Yeah,
and that's part of the problem as well, because you've got all this excitement around Alfa Romeo. Sauber with Audi coming in, so they've got good momentum. Yeah. Aston Martin, I think, have got fantastic momentum.
Yeah, last season,
You know, Haas have got... They're hitting the budget cap now with MoneyGram. AlphaTauri, maybe they'll sell that team off. Maybe they'll keep it going. Who knows? But, like, we know the potential of AlphaTauri. We saw that in 2021. Like Williams, it just feels like they're nowhere.
Especially if they're still not reaching that budget cap, then you're in big trouble because everyone's paying exactly the same amount of thing. Not only do you have to pay and put your money in the right places to build the best car, but if you don't have that money to start off with, then you're always going to be on the back foot. Yeah. So, if Porsche come in, buy out the team, new facilities, all of that stuff, then that's going to be great for the sport, a competitive brand that's going to hopefully, like Audi want to, try and fight at the front and have more teams fighting for points and, you know, get back to like the kind of 2012 days where you had so many different teams fighting for it. Because I'm always a believer that you kind of need domination in sport. You need maybe three teams always at the top, and those three teams kind of rotate. So you don't always have the same three for 50 years that are always going to be at the top. No, for 5 years you have these three, and then the next 5 years it kind of rotates a little bit with a different three or maybe two new teams coming into that.
Creates new storylines. If everyone's always equal, you don't get any storylines.
You don't get the likes of Pierre Gasly winning a race or Esteban Ocon when he won a race. You don't get those joyous moments even when they get on podiums. But if you can have it kind of similar to the 2012 days where, there was a few new guys winning, but we also had like eight different races that season, a lot of different guys fighting for the podiums.
Was that the year where we had seven winners?
Seven winners in the first seven races. And it was just all the races were
including
entertaining. All the races I'm pretty sure were entertaining in that season because you had so many in that midfield fight.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's hopefully the sort of thing we're heading to with the cost cap, you know, bringing the teams together anyway, you'll get that sort of accordion effect, but also like, then the investment from the brands like Porsche, Honda or whatever, and Audi as well, taking over some of the smaller teams. I mean, the dream is that Porsche take over and then call it Porsche Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically.
Yeah.
And it's more of like a, obviously Porsche are running the thing, but it's a bit, it looks like a partnership from the outside and you keep the Williams name.
Yeah.
That's really the dream.
I guess, that's the thing, isn't it? You look at the McLaren from the kind of Senna Prost days, the Marlboro one, and it was the McLaren Honda.
Mm-hmm.
But people remember McLaren. You know what I mean? And it's like if Porsche, it's whichever name comes first, I guess. Mm-hmm. If you were to, it would be Porsche Williams.
I think it would be in their best interest to call it Porsche Williams.
Yeah.
Probably.
It's like anything, wherever name comes first, this kind of thing. Like, you'll probably say it's Tomo and Niren's podcast. You'll say it's Niren and Tomo's podcast. No, it's this way around.
Everyone's got short attention spans.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm going to check in the description. Who's who comes first in
Nomo.
The description?
We'll just blend it together. It's fine.
But regardless, I think, like, new teams need to be allowed to enter. I still don't get why. I mean, I do get it. It's just greed, I think, from my personal opinion. At the end of the day, it's just greed, because another team
exactly
comes
what
in.
Andretti said.
Oh, it's taken away from my prize pool money, which, look, I understand, but it's just greed at the end of the day. You're sort of gatekeeping, and you're shutting people out. You're like, no, you can't come into our sport because I want this money. And it's, I hate the rules around Formula One where the teams decide what happens. It needs to have somebody who goes, this is what's happening, and if you don't like it, go away, because we've got other people knocking on the door who want to get involved.
They want to get involved.
Rather than the teams go, one team goes, actually, I don't like this, it doesn't suit me, so I'm going to vote against it. And everyone's like, well, okay, that's crap then, because one team voted against it. Like, it's just stupid.
That's the thing, because we talked about this last week, didn't we? We feel like F1 has the power now and the standing and the audience to not have to buckle to these teams. I don't think, don't get me wrong, I want to see Ferrari in the sport for a long time coming, but I think in 2023 today, if Ferrari were like, we want this rule change or we'll leave, I think Formula One would lose less than it would have done 10 years ago. Ferrari had left 10 years ago.
And they won't leave.
It's posturing,
isn't
it?
They won't leave.
It's just like, oh, yeah.
And they'll see, oh, okay, crap, this is actually doing really well. Like,
they're doing
it's
right
booming.
Now.
They're getting more money for being part of it. Okay, we want back in. Do a Honda. Like, you leave, but you're not actually going to leave. You're just threatening. But unfortunately, they cave under these threats because we've been in a place before the growth of Formula One that we've had recently where if they did leave, then more teams would follow and it would be bad for the sport. But now we've got a lot of people and a lot of teams who are interested, a lot of companies who are interested to get into the sport. So if you do leave, okay, see you later then.
Ciao, adios.
Yeah,
there just needs to be more power, realistically.
So my contractor said that there's two teams in support, Alpine, rumoured to be Renault engine deal with Andretti, so that's why there's support, and McLaren, Zak Brown, I guess, kind of gets it.
Yeah,
you know?
Just vibes. They're just like, yeah,
I think
get involved.
Zak Brown's a smart man who goes, do you know what, who thinks more, I think, about the show than...
He's a marketing man as well.
But he's a marketing man. Yeah. He thinks more about the show. He's like, another team in, it's going to make it better. It's
American team as well.
An American team is going to mean more money from America, more sponsors from America. Like,
I think sometimes you've got to think outside the box. I know they're going like, oh yeah, well, the pie is getting... But if you really deep it, another American team getting involved in Formula One would, like an actual all-American team as well that we mentioned before, not necessarily in terms of the driver lineup, but potentially taking a driver from IndyCar, for example, that's immediately an extra lane opened up. The fact that they're just American in the first place, like F1 are trying to cater to that audience, that is going to bring so many more eyeballs to the sport and therefore a bit more money as well. That can be split between the teams. You got to just think about it a bit more.
I do kind of feel like there is this kind of gatekeeping against America from Formula One, because it's just kind of like, not Formula One themselves, obviously we've got three American races,
the teams.
But you've got the likes of Colton Herta last year, that big drama where everyone's just like, no, you can't come in. Like, even though they found sort of loopholes and ways that he could drive if they wanted him for AlphaTauri, but there was a lot of people just like, no, you can't drive. No, he's not allowed. And it's this again, where it's like an American team wants to get involved.
It's so,
it's just like,
it's so,
nah, you're
fucking
not
political. Like, there's so much bollocks. If it was another FIA series that Colton Herta was in, like, say he was, I don't know, like an IMSA or, I don't know. Like, if it wasn't IndyCar, I feel like they would have been more compromising to get him in. Yeah. But because it wasn't, they want to set a point like, no, we want the drivers to come through our system. But then also you've got the FIA and MBS being like big, like proponents of Andretti coming in and shouting, like tweeting about it, and just like not even from the official account, just from his, like, you know, he's just sat on the toilet on the shitter, just like,
yeah, just like, oh, Chris, yeah, get people talking.
And
right?
I think it's a huge thing that somebody is so keen, because obviously we talked about it before where they've tried to get in through, I think the rumours were they were going to go with Sauber and link up with them and be a partnership there.
Yeah, they did try.
And that got denied. So they're like, right, okay, how do we get in? Let's try and do it ourselves. Like, no, you can't do it yourself. Okay, we're going to align with Cadillac, so we're going to be a car brand. No, you can't do that. I mean,
this is literally what we said last week as well. It's kind of like, if Andretti, a team with naming heritage in Formula One, along with a major manufacturer and car brand, and all the money, can't get in, and how actually do you get Formula One?
This annoys me, because this is an instance where F1 doesn't feel like a sport. It feels like a business.
Yeah, 1,000.
And it's all business politics, and it's not about the good of the sport, which I think everyone collectively would like to see an 11th team at least. Mm-hmm. And Andretti, you've got Mario's, again, world champion. Michael raced alongside Ayrton Senna in 93. Like, you've got that. It's nonsense. Yeah. But,
and it's just like the last proper time that we had teams come in, obviously, I think 12 was perfect back in the 2010 to sort of 2012, 2013 days, when 12 cars on the grid. Yeah, okay, the three teams that came in were not ready. They were not ready for F1 and they struggled at the back.
That was just dealt with badly. It was a rush and there wasn't a cost cap. There was intended to be a cost cap, but there wasn't in the end.
And the top teams were spending like $400 million a year. Yeah. So how are you meant to compete?
But that's why I think that there is this shut-off, because obviously they allowed them in there last that time. What's different between that time and this time, and that is, I think, the cost cap. And it's like, okay, they can be competitive with us. Like, they see Andretti Cadillac as a threat and be like, okay, you could actually be a decent team. Like, if Audi wanted to come in as their own team, they would also be shut off and be like, no, you can't come in because you're a threat to us. You can win the championship and take
tough
all our money.
Shit.
Haas joined the sport 2016, finished eighth in the constructors ahead of Renault in their first ever
difference
season.
The difference, I'd say, with that one is that they took over the kind of Manor Marussia spot. Yep. So it wasn't like you're stealing our prize
the
money.
The facilities,
they took over the facilities, but they also took over their spot in the championship, kind of. So it was more a case of, like, instead of being now, a new team's coming in, which means your prize pool's going to get smaller because we have to spread about more teams. It was just like, oh, okay, we're still getting
I mean, more in terms
prize.
Of, like, they were able to be competitive immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And they weren't, because Marussia were stuck at the back.
Yes.
Haas were able to take Marussia's facilities.
I miss Manor so much. That red and blue Manor.
It was
so
beautiful,
low.
Wasn't it? That last
and they were just getting there. I could sense it. The next season, they were going to be... Oh, I'm sorry.
They had some sick sponsors as well. They were sponsored by Shazam.
Gas.
And Airbnb as well.
Nice.
if you play a song next to the car, it just tells you what
but
it is.
But that's how they put up. They couldn't afford the big hotels.
That's what I mean, I was going to say. Every track they go to, they're just like putting Airbnb calls out. Please. Like, go to Singapore Grand Prix. You got these stupidly expensive... honestly, like...
Airbnb, 30 quid a night.
That would be incredible. Yeah. Well, look, hopefully in next year's Drive to Survive, we'll see a bit of this Andretti drama behind the scenes. And maybe even Andretti on the grid. But this season, well, for last year, of course, coming 24th of February, just after all the car launches.
So we're going to see all the Piastri drama during all this as well.
Juicy. I hope so. Juicy. But what are
the main topics are we expecting?
Yeah, what storylines? Because obviously a lot of the criticism around Drive to Survive is that they don't cover everything. Mm-hmm. But you can't really expect them to cover everything unless they've got, 100 people at every single race with cameras.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. They obviously choose a focal point at each Grand Prix.
Yeah,
so they can't literally cover every single story that happens. What sort of storylines are we expecting?
I think we'll have a story on Mercedes. Like, one episode would be dedicated to Mercedes, sort of like coming into the season. Toto's speech at the end of last season would be like, everyone has a target on their backs, and then
they missed.
Lewis, my team don't make mistakes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good quotes.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's going to be a case of building up to that, with the climax of the episode being George Russell's win and Mercedes are back on top, kind of thing. That's one episode, I think. I think we're also going to have a story, hopefully, around the drama around Perez and Verstappen, and sort of see what happened at Monaco, see if there's any backroom drama between that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great storyline.
Verstappen's on it this year for the first time as well.
That's a great storyline.
Oh, really?
For next year
as
well. I mean, the Perez Verstappen thing is, in my opinion, is not coming down. It's going bigger next year. Bold prediction for 2023. Perez out, Ricardo in halfway through the season.
Really?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
seen a few people say that.
Listen, I said it first.
He said it first. But
and I think, because we didn't have maybe around McLaren, and that they came out of the blocks, and everyone was like, this team is going to be fighting at the front with Ferrari, and then it just didn't kind of work.
Especially
them,
first
it.
Race of the year.
Yeah, I mean, they were shit so show. Far off.
Yeah.
And obviously Ricardo getting COVID and missing out and all of that sort of stuff. And then Lando obviously getting that podium. I think they're going to tee up the season in a way that Imola kind of happened more towards the end of the season, so that Lando got that podium as the car
end
progressed.
Mix up the whole calendar. Yeah. I hear that.
And then I think obviously Sebastian Vettel, if there's not an episode dedicated to Sebastian Vettel, just cancel the whole series.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely there has to be, realistically. There has to be. Maybe, oh, I don't know, because I don't think they were following Haas at Brazil. I don't know who they were following at Brazil.
That's a good but one Kevin as well. Magnussen, yeah, that's a good one as well. Kevin Magnussen, the story of Kevin Magnussen. I mean, just there'd be one, hopefully an episode based on him.
Yeah, like, honestly,
coming in last minute, getting fifth in Bahrain, a pole position.
You say about the Verstappen-Perez thing, actually, I'm sure I remember there were Netflix cameras around when... You remember those
always
pictures?
Around.
Yeah, they're always
there.
With their little boom mic, just sticking it through random holes.
The
just trying to pick
on
up.
It.
Just
there's a big fight kicking off and you just see this boom mic slowly come down.
It's like Javelin, just launch it.
Into the mix.
I'm sure I remember... You remember there was the picture of Behind the Glass and it was, I think, Max and Max's like agent or something. Or, I don't know. There was a conversation. I'm sure I remember just seeing they're like... The furry thing hanging over.
Yeah.
I think they'll pick a midfield battle probably as well. Like they kind of, because I know people talk about artificially creating like team rivalries, but I think in terms of that battle, do you reckon it would Alfa Romeo and Aston Martin? Obviously, they came down to the wire.
Alpine McLaren.
Yeah, I would love to know because they must shoot thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of footage. So it is a huge task to put it all together and actually create some kind of narrative.
The SD card for that series is this big.
Yeah, they just have a Joe Guan, you know, a Valtteri Bottas versus Sebastian Vettel where they hate each other across the season. And it's like this one race where they have slightly go wheel to wheel. That's the key moment
of the episode. Changes it all.
Definitely. But I'm just trying to think other kind of off track. Yeah, I do wonder how they will cover the Piastri thing because obviously that went on for a while and a lot of it was like, you know, obviously the tweets went out and everyone went mad, but then there was a lot of radio silence. You wonder if they kind of pulled in for some interviews. They must have been straight on the blower to Mark Webber, his agent.
Yeah. I think there'd be an episode kind of maybe more dedicated to like silly season and you have Will Buxton with a line of just like, if a driver leaves one team and goes to another team, he now drives for a new team in Formula One.
I really do hope he plays into that. And just
He loved it last year, so I think he will. But I think there'd be something on that. And I think also the cost cap might be because there was so much drama around two races that was going on between like all of that and all the investigations and the rumours coming out and then denying it and being like, it's not true. And then it was true.
That's the thing. On track, it might not have been great in 2022.
A lot of politics.
A lot of drama. Which is exactly... You know what I want to see? You remember when the totally natural phone call where Christian Horner calls up Checo. I want Lawrence Stroll to do that to Alonso.
Yes.
That would be phenomenal. Because, I mean, there's so many different like dynamics and characters going on. But I think that, obviously, Gunther's going to make an appearance.
Yeah.
Do you reckon he'll plug his book, Surviving to Drive?
That is ridiculous.
It's just with him the whole time.
But that K-Mag poll, I really hope they were there to capture that. Because we were saying earlier, right? It's all when all 10 teams being competitive. Yeah, that sounds good in theory, but actually in practice, you don't get those storylines.
That's what I mean.
That was so wholesome, man. I shed a tear seeing him.
When he stood on top of the car that. You don't get that sort of thing. You don't get...
Those are the stories I want to see in Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't need to be, you know, dramatised. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't need to add any spice to it.
Yeah.
It's spicy enough.
Yeah.
That's what I mean when I say, like, domination is good for a sport because you have those storylines and you need winners and you need losers, but you need also a platform where people can go up and down the table. They can't just be like, here, cool, we're always going to be here and we're always going to be here. You need that rise and fall. But yeah, there has to be an episode on Haas from where they were last year, the drama of dropping Mazepin because of the war kicking off and all of the sponsors and all the politics that happened there and the reason why he's now out of the sport. Kevin Magnussen had a year out, he's come back. You know, there's all this hype around him and then he got that P5 in Bahrain. It's all looking so good for Haas. They're actually fighting in the midfield, they're fighting for points. Oh no, it's getting worse. Then will they go back to where they were? They get a pole position in Brazil and it's just like, there's a great storyline there. And if they haven't got there, then they have missed a beat. But so many times we talk about great storylines in Drive to Survive and so, because there is always so much that goes on in a season that for 10 episodes or 8, I think it's 10 that they have, isn't it?
Yeah, it was 10 last year.
10 episodes, like, unfortunately, not all of it's going to be in there, which is such a shame.
You will miss out on stuff because, again, there's always stuff going on off the track. And that sort of... that way that it's operated, where they focus on, do they still focus on a team at each Grand Prix, or do they just kind of go there generally now? Because I know when they started,
I think it's easier because on one team, and then we haven't got the restrictions anymore around the paddock. Because I think they had to stick with a team and they couldn't move because they were in that bubble.
Okay, yeah.
So I think they're a bit more flexible now.
That's good. That's good. Okay, well, just
running up and down the paddock with, like you said, the boom.
What's happening? Piastri's over there.
We'll see. I'm excited. And I think this is the thing. Like, I love F1. I love talking about F1. I love diving into the details. But also, I enjoy Drive to Survive because I think, in my opinion, I think a lot of the anti-sentiment, I don't know if you agree, is misaligned expectations. Mm-hmm. Like, when I watch Drive to Survive, I'm not expecting a season review.
Yeah.
I'm expecting, like, something that's not really designed for me as a priority, mm-hmm. but there's some interesting behind-the-scenes interactions that I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
I don't need to know how the season played out. I watched it. I was there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't need that. I don't need a review. I could just watch all the races back, but all the highlights, but that is what it offers.
Yeah.
That's what it offers the hardcore fan or someone that watches each and every race, is that sort of behind the scene. Oh, like, oh, I didn't know that about this person or whatever. And then for the casual fan that's maybe just getting involved, it offers that excitement and, a bit of a recap of what the season is.
And it's a new way for people to get in as well. Like, so many people have got in from Drive to Survive, and I hate that people go to them and go, you're only here because Drive to Survive. Name me who was 10th in FP1 in Belgium in 2010. No, you don't know that. You're not a true fan. Like, it doesn't work like that. Like,
who cares? Everyone has an interest in.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's a great way for people to start, and then they can build upon that, get in, pick a favorite driver because I like his personality. Now I'm going to learn more about this driver and learn more about this team, and then build from it from that way. And I think it's great to get people in. And I think the same as you too, that, you know, I watch it as just laid back. You know, I'm not looking for a season review. It's for me, we've just had the car launches, the hype's coming back, I'm getting excited for Formula One, and now I can get back into just before, a week before the season starts, and enjoy what happened last season with a little bit of drama, just to build up that hype once again and get me really excited for Formula One to be back.
You know what's nice about it as well? It's something I can recommend to my mates. And I can watch with my mates.
Yeah.
If I say, oh, you should watch the, you know, Japanese Grand Prix, wake up at, you know, 5 a.m. Like, that's not going to, even like a prime time slot. It's like, if got a mate who knows nothing about F1, I'm not going to recommend them watch the Grand Prix because
can't sell you pick a rubbish one. You pick Mexico.
Never
always watch it ever again.
always happens. But like, Spanish Grand Prix on this weekend. I'm going to watch it. It's terrible.
I recommend Drive to Survive to, like, everyone I like know who's not into F1, I don't even tell them to watch my stuff. I'm like, go watch Drive to Survive.
That's poor marketing right there.
You're missing the trick, bro.
I'm too honest.
No, after that, tell them to like.
Then come and like and subscribe. Yeah. But I'm just like, it's a great entry point. I just think, I think there needs to be more acceptance of Drive to Survive. I know people say that because they think I'm just shilling because I want to get on there and replace Will, which is not the case, but box to box.
The job's available.
My email's on my Twitter, so hit me up if you need me. Right, let's do Equal Machinery now, the final part of the podcast.
Indeed.
Do you want to explain the format to the audience and to Hayden as well?
What is Equal Machinery?
You're in for a treat, my
ladies and gentlemen. This is the segment of the pod. Not the show. Well, the show as well. This is the same one of the pod.
The shoddy poddy. That's bad marketing for you.
Also bad marketing. Yeah. And not very shoddy at all. This is the segment of the pod where we are allocated a driver each, and we basically have to argue that in Equal Machinery, our driver would win today.
Okay.
So you will get a driver, I get a driver. You get a driver, it's allocated by our lovely producer, Lewis. Shout out Lou over there.
Lewis.
And then at the end, it's basically we have to argue whether we believe it or not, and then at the end we'll guess whether we actually believe what we were saying.
Who's the best at waffling? I like it.
Who's the best at waffling?
Well, you've got a minute, so you can't spend too much time. But it was fun last week, actually, with Matt. He was... that was the longest minute of my life.
No, I mean, he's got a lot of practice supporting Daniel Ricciardo the last season, so there's a lot of defenders that he's...
And we gave him Oscar Piastri. Which is quite funny. So, I have been allocated, and again, we're talking today.
I've had some stinkers the last 2 weeks, by the way.
So I've been given Mark Webber.
Okay.
Mark Webber. Niren, you've got Nico Hülkenberg. And Hayden, you've got Daniel Ricciardo.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Danny Avocado. I went first last time, so... One of you two can go first. I'll let you pick, Niren.
I'm going to pass over to
him. Of course, I need that. I need you to think about it.
You did that last time.
I've got a little list to think about with Daniel Ricciardo.
Okay, so in 2023, why is Daniel Ricciardo clear of Nico Hülkenberg and Mark Webber? In 3, 2, 1, go.
Well, I mean, Daniel Ricciardo, I feel like, has achieved a lot more than Mark Webber in a Red Bull. I also feel like he's actually won races, unlike Nico Hülkenberg. So there's two clear examples right there. We forget about 2022. He still won a race in 2021. 2022 is just chilling, you know, a lot of relaxing going on, a lot of politics at McLaren. I feel like they just liked Lando Norris a lot more, so they weren't really too worried. They were like, well, hang on, wait, we've got a second car? Oh, wait. So that's obviously what happened last year with Daniel Ricciardo.
We go past
that. I think 2014, best driver on the grid that season, absolutely smashed it.
Nine years ago,
I think he's got 8 or 9 race wins. Looking back at his race wins that he's got, Monaco, very strong driver at Monaco as well. And I think in equal machinery,
you got 10 seconds left.
I think in equal machinery, it's a given that Daniel Ricciardo is such a stronger driver than Mark Webber and Nico Hülkenberg.
I'll do.
We've got 3 seconds. He's stronger.
He's, he's got a big neck.
He's got a big neck.
Thick neck. All right. You're going next because my driver's not been F1 for years, so I've got work to do.
Yeah.
You're going next, Nico. At least yours is actually has a seat next year, this year.
Yeah, true.
Ready?
Okay, yeah.
Cool. Nico Hülkenberg, why is he clear of Ricciardo and Webber today? In 3, 2, 1, go.
All right. Well, obviously, we're talking about today, but backstory, this guy was one of the most exciting drivers to come onto the Formula One grid at the time. Sensational junior record, and came in and grabbed a pole in crazy conditions in a Williams in 2010. So already, straight off the bat, he's proven that he's a very exciting driver already. There we go. Now, I know, obviously, look, the podium situation was tough, but he's never really had a chance. He's never been in a car that's actually been good enough to achieve a podium. And the fact that he's even come close to podiums on multiple occasions shows that he can extract the most out of any car on any given day. That Sauber in like the Indian Grand Prix getting like fourth or some shit in like 2013. How is he even extracting that much out of that car realistically? Force India, bang average, constantly beating Paul de Resta. He's always had the better over his teammate in whatever car he's been in. Probably. And he's jumped into an Aston Martin or any car and slapped it.
Stop.
With no practice. Recently.
I'm surprised you didn't mention the Racing Point stand-in.
You kind of forgot that.
2020.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, that's the Racing Point.
That car just it doesn't exist in my brain anymore for some reason. But okay. Yeah.
Not bad. But you're about to get destroyed.
Do you remember who Mark Webber was?
This is why Marky Mark Webber is clear of Daniel Ricciardo, his countryman, and Nico Hülkenberg today. I'm sure I remember hearing a quote from Sebastian Vettel saying Mark Webber was the strongest driver he ever went against in the same machinery.
Fake news.
Quite recently. Might not be true, but regardless, I'm not going to talk about the past anymore. I'm going to talk about today. He is Oscar Piastri's agent. Do you have any idea? He basically sees himself in Oscar, if not Oscar's probably a bit more talented, we'll say. And that's going to rejuvenate. That's going to bring out this side of Marky Mark Webber, even though he's in his 40s now. Trust me, Mark Webber does not faff about, right? He's Aussie grit for a reason, right?
Yeah,
Marky Mark Webber is unreal. He went toe-to-toe with Vettel and got... Okay, he did well twice of those 4 seasons.
Okay, yeah.
And now it's like he is now Oscar Piastri. So basically everything Oscar does is through Mark Webber. Mm-hmm, so yeah. I feel like when Oscar Piastri destroys Lando Norris in 2023, it will actually be because of Mark Webber. Done.
Interesting. So your argument is that Mark Webber is Oscar Piastri.
Yeah.
Not even...
Yeah,
he physically
exactly.
is the same... Right, okay.
He's like living vicariously through Oscar Piastri. You know, he's kind of like VR. He's VR. So when Oscar's VR. Racing... Mark's in like Brisbane on his sim racing, and then Oscar's in the car, but Mark's actually controlling
it. Oscar's just a robot, so he's not actually a real person.
Yeah, they swapped him out.
Mark is just literally, he's got the control, just VR, he's driving for.
Oscar's still in the Alpine dungeon. They didn't let him out.
Ah, okay.
So now they've got a body double.
Okay.
That is.
There's a robot
functioning as Mark Webber. Yeah.
Okay.
And we will see in 2023.
To be fair, yeah. We don't
look exactly the same.
He has the helmet on, so we can't see when he's.
I've made a very Yeah, exactly. Who would know? You know, I make a very You know,
like that Mark Webber's bare tall. I don't think Oscar Piastri's tall.
No, one day, like, it would take the helmet off, but the actual head will come off as well. And then just be standing there and everyone will be like,
oh my God.
The magician. Okay. So what do we actually think then?
I mean, one of your points was that Vettel said that Mark Webber was the best driver he raced against Nico Rosberg. Daniel Ricciardo beat him in 2014. Yours was that Nico Hülkenberg beat every driver he's got up against. He lost to Daniel Ricciardo in the Renaults. I mean.
Oh yeah. Honestly, Nico Hülkenberg in a Renault. That's crazy.
It's pretty easy.
I think Checo beat him a couple of times.
Yeah, I'm not gonna, when I said that, I was just like, I hope they don't do their research. Like, I was just.
All right. Well, what are we honestly saying in machinery today? Because I think it is very funny, Lewis. Mark Webber in there, but yeah, it's between Nico and Daniel.
I don't know. I'll put some respect on Mark Webber. I think Sebastian Vettel was incredibly strong when he was winning.
We're talking today in 2023.
I know.
If we're talking today, it is easy.
He's a Channel 4 merchant now.
Yeah,
so,
it is easy, you know, today. Like, he's going to jump in the car and he's not going to fit.
So you don't believe what you were?
No, I don't believe. No, that's funnily
shame.
Enough.
That's a shame.
I don't believe that Oscar Piastri is an android controlled by Mark Webber. No,
I hope so. I don't believe that. Would have been a clip. Yeah. He did. That's what I'm saying.
I think the clip's done. Yeah. Nico and Daniel, 2023. Obviously, Daniel's coming off a very poor season, but he's shown higher highs. Nico has always kind of been in midfield with machinery. So podium opportunities would always have had to rely on luck, outside things outside of his control going right from to convert a podium. So I think that is an unfair, you know, log to
bat. Yeah, that is always an unfair comparison, I think. I think you've got to also, yeah, Daniel's coming off the back of a poor season, but Nico isn't the same driver he was, say, 6 or 7 years ago in the Force India.
I think he's still a strong driver. When he jumped in for Racing Point, when he jumped in last season with Aston Martin, just jumped in and he was quick. He beat Lance Stroll in qualifying, I think, on both occasions.
I think one of them he did, yeah.
One of them? I thought,
prop your boy, come on.
All right, well, I mean, I got enough slander, I've just stayed in the memory. But I think he is strong when he comes in. Like, I have always rated Nico Hülkenberg over the years when he came in. 2010, you know, got that pole position in Brazil. Did it before Kevin Magnussen.
He was the originator.
Yeah. And then, you know, he's had all these different close shaves with a podium. But I think as a driver who is going to get you across the line and get you the race wins, get you podiums, Ricciardo's done it. He's proved that he can do it. And he maybe Nico Hülkenberg, under that pressure, just kind of collapses a little bit.
Yeah.
I'd pick Ricciardo, I think.
You're picking Ricciardo?
Pick Ricciardo.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Ricciardo as well. I can't lie. Big ups, Nico Hülkenberg. I do love you. And I do genuinely think he has been so unlucky to not. I think, again, that podium is an unfair thing to bash him with because he's just never had the machinery to compete.
Context is important.
Like, consistently at all, like at any point during his career. And I think he does always extract the most out of that car when he's in a Sauber, when he was in the Force India, the original one, the Racing Point, you know. Yeah, I think he's solid, but just because Daniel Ricciardo had a poor season last season does not mean he's not the same driver. Daddy Walls.
McLaren's a weird car.
Well, he's coming in at Red Bull halfway through the season, so.
Well, then we'll judge. Then we'll see.
Who are you picking? Ricciardo?
Ricciardo. Yeah.
Clean sweep, Daniel Ricciardo.
Hat trick, baby.
See him back on the grid soon. Maybe in an Andretti.
Maybe.
Yeah. All-American team, and he's pretty much an All-American driver, isn't he?
He's an honorary American driver. Yeah,
exactly.
Cowboy hat on over the helmet, sorted.
They've got to reenact it next year, the horse at Austin.
When they announce Andretti Cadillac are coming in, it's just Daniel Ricciardo on a horse. Back bitches.
Three Cadillacs just like behind him in the shop.
Lassoing people, just put them in.
That makes so much sense. As a marketing actor. Just do it for the marketing activation. That's it.
Yeah, you're welcome, Andretti, by the way.
Even if not, just do it for fun.
Yeah.
Even if you're not coming into the sport.
April Fools. April Patrol, you know. Just to wind everyone up. Yeah. That's a great episode.
Sensational. Good stuff.
Right, that's wrap, man.
Yeah, that is it for today's episode, today's podcast, the Last Lap Show. We've waffled sensationally successfully. Thank you very much, Hayden, for jumping on.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find you?
Right now in here. This is where I am located. Anywhere. I mean, on YouTube with my name, Hayden Gullis. Twitch with my name, Hayden Gullis.
F1 Esports.
Or F1 Esports. Any sort of sim racing show,
Hayden
maybe.
Gullis. Also Hayden Gullis.
Hayden Gullis. The period is Hayden Gullis. Yeah.
Do you go by anything other than Hayden Gullis? We can confirm. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on and hopping on, Tomo. It's been a good one.
Five stars. Like, subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts.
Yep. SoundCloud. Who are not there?
Cadillac.com.
Marketing campaigns for Cadillac. You can catch us there.
Comparethepodcast.com.
Yeah.
TikTok, that's number million one. Views again.
Yeah, trust me.
Yeah.
We're getting that again. One million man's pulling in a million views again.
Now, cheers everyone for coming. Audio only, visual, wherever you join us today. Have a good day. We'll see you soon. Very soon. Come on 2023.
Adios.
Up the F1.